Kate Davis is being interviewed by Renee Garalick for Concord's Oral History Program, sponsored by the Concord Historical Commission. The interview is taking place at her home at 12 Bow Street on December 13, 1978. Miss Davis is 86 years old. It's very appropriate, as the Christmas season comes upon us, that I should be asking you about your composition of the Carol of the Drum, better known as the Little Drummer Boy. You've probably been asked a number of times, how did you happen to write it?
When you ask me to talk about the Little Drummer Boy, Renee, it seemed to me that there was very little to say, not enough to fill a page. And it didn't seem to have anything to do with Concord, except that it happened to be written in an old house on Lexington Road. But then I began to remember questions people used to ask about, nearly always the same ones. Mm-hmm. So I can at least try to answer those questions. They asked me first how I happened to write it. And then they'd ask me if I'd written any other music. I quickly told them I'd made my living for years writing music. And strangely enough, I can remember exactly about how I happened to write The Little Drummer Boy. It was in 1941. I was taking a nap at my house on Lexington Road when a new tune kept running through my head, and it seemed to me to be worth working on. So I went downstairs and wrote it out. I wrote it up in order not to forget the tune. I get the tune first. Sometimes a few words along with it, but only a few. And this time I knew that somewhere there'd be a drum. I've known several French carols with a drum or fife and drum. One called Pa-Pa-Pa. And another with a very French accent, Ra-Pa-Pa. This button have set me going. The words came very easily. Then I decided I'd have it for a mixed chorus with no accompaniment. And the sopranos and altos would sing the air, and the basses and tenors would do the drumming. Drumming. I remembered suddenly Ravel's Bolero, a big orchestra piece, do you remember, in the 30s? Mm-hmm. Where the drumming begins very softly and gradually goes loud. The drumming, of course, is in real drums, and there's a whole orchestra. So it gets louder and louder with the same ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta- Well, I thought I can't have that kind of climax with just voices. So I thought, well, I have to get very slowly and gradually fill in notes. The tune will go on just the same speed, but the drums will seem to be getting faster and faster. So I did that. I worked it out. And I rather liked it. It sounded like a folk song. I thought, well, why not? Where from? Well, why not from Czechoslovakia? Some people think that you shouldn't, that that's not quite honest. But it's done all the time and accepted. For instance, there's that Shepherd's Farewell of yes. Berlioz, I don't know if you know it or not, which he said was a very ancient tune. And he used it and modulated all the time, most complicated, really difficult modulations for the chorus to sing. And he didn't know anything about ancient melodies, but the fact is, a single melody like that, it can't possibly modulate. And they never do. Might try to sometimes. So somebody finally went to him and said, now look here, old man, this is a fake. you made this yourself, didn't you? And he had to admit that he did. And Chrysler did a whole set of violin pieces that he had somebody else's name on for a long time until they were such a success that he was willing to say they were his. And there were some nice spirituals, well, 20 years ago, that everybody sang. Do you know that one called Jesus, Jesus, Rest Your Head? You Has Got a Manger Bed? You don't remember that one, but you're a little too young. But anyway, they finally admitted, the man said it was a folk song, finally admitted it was his. Then there's, of course, there's Elizabeth Barrett Browning with all her sonnets from the Portuguese. And everybody knows they weren't translations, they were just out of her own heart. I let mine be checked, and I called it the Carol of the Drum. That's the way it started. You may know it by a different title now, but that it started life as the Carol of the Drum. And I put my name down for the music. This is a little tricky for copyright reasons, but I wanted to make it perfectly copyright sound, proof, whatever I mean. So I put my name down for the music, and the words I put down is from a Czech carol. And then I realized I'd need a translator. And so I put down, translated by C.R.W. Robertson. And people say, well, where did you get that name? Well, I made it up. I'd worked on texts for Hollis Dann's school book series. And I'd done so many texts that finally he said, now, would you please get a few pseudonyms, so he'd written the whole book. And I was delighted because I didn't want my name all over all those little verses. So I got some pseudonyms. I made up some, and I used names of deceased grandparents and uncles, and they're all registered at ASCAP, which, as you know, is the agency that tracks performances on the air and pays composers a percentage. So there it was, all done and signed, and it was published by Wood in Boston. And it was first recorded by the Pratt family. You know, the Pratt, yes. The Sound of Music. That's what they're famous for, but they're much more famous for their most beautiful a cappella scene before and after they came to this country. A few years later, Wood sold the song to Mills, a big New York publisher. I mean, Wood sold his whole business to Mills, not just the song. Then 18 years later, in December 59, a friend called me up and said, Kay, your carol is on the air all the time, everywhere on radio. I said, what carol? She said, The Little Drummer Boy. Well, I didn't ever write a carol called The Little Drummer Boy. So I tuned on a station, any old station, and there it was, the most beautiful recording I could possibly have imagined. There were about two words that were different, as I found out later, and a little music, a few notes changed, but I don't think I noticed then. And you could hear it somewhere every 5 minutes, and I must admit it was very exciting and sort of disturbing to me. So I telephoned the station, and they took my, I said, that's my carol that you're broadcasting. So they took my name and number and called back and informed me that that was called The Little Drummer Boy. It was an old carol that had just been discovered, and there were about four or five men's names on the composition, and a different composer, a different publisher, but my name wasn't anywhere on it. So the next day I telephoned the editor at Mills in New York and explained what was happening. She hadn't heard, but it hit New York very soon. And it was plainly a legal matter. And I was glad that Mills had a lot of lawyers that I could fall back on. So then began a long legal thing. First they planned a trial. And then the lawyer phoned, saying that they were planning to send to Czechoslovakia to find the Jews. And I remember his ferocious tone when he said, "They're bad men." Well, I figured if they were bad men, they could easily find another bad man in Czechoslovakia who, for a suitable sum, could remember learning the tune at his mother's knee. He said if it came to trial and I lost and I couldn't prove that I'd written the tune unless I'd had witnesses standing around at the time, then I'd lose not only the little drummer boy but my carol of the drum. He said we should settle out of court. The men had spent enormous sums on promotion, and it seemed to me it was fair for them to get their part. So it was settled out of court. And that's the end of that part of the chapter.
So no one ever went to Czechoslovakia to attempt to prove anything?
I assume they didn't. Now it goes on in both versions, both owned by Mills. Of course, the publisher always owns the music. I don't own the music. He owns it. He's bought it, and he pays me royalties on it. This is fairly obvious, but a lot of people don't understand. I thought I'd throw it in. So, as I say, both of these versions were owned by Mills. And it's gone all over Europe, Japan, South Africa, South America. It's translated into several languages. I don't think it's been to China or Russia yet. I haven't heard. And there are a few postscripts also. I've had letters from Czechs or people of Czech descent living in this country. And they write and say, "That's not a Czech tune. We never heard it." And one of them said, "I always thought the little drummer boy was about the Civil War," and they all want an explanation, which I'm willing to give. Then about a year or so ago, one of the men who was supposed to have written The Little Drummer Boy was presented in a large illustrated feature article in a Florida paper. He told how he had written The Little Drummer Boy and how I was an old friend and had helped him. The article was picked up in Boston and other large cities, and people wrote to ask me about it. I sent it to Mills, editor, and asked him whether I could write to Mr. Onorati, that was his name, and sass him a little. "Oh, no," said the editor very calmly. "It really does us a great deal of good. It stirs up interest." Now, I haven't said anything about the television things. Do you think I might?
Oh, sure.
Well, of course, it was very soon made into a cartoon with the Vienna choir boys singing the song now and then, but a great deal going on in the cartoon. I must say I never felt happy about the cartoon because it brought in so many ugly things. It had nothing to do with the spirit or feeling of the song, but it's gone on every year, and ASCAP hears it and I get something for it. But I think the most fun I had was during the first few years listening to the various television presentations of it on regular television shows, like the Bob Hope Show would just do the whole thing, and they all did it sooner or later. Some of them were very commonplace, some were quite imaginative, and there was one especially beautiful one that I can't even describe. It had a sort of feeling of the juggler of Notre Dame. You know, the little boy that offers his skill of juggling, which I think must have been in my mind a little from the beginning, too. And this one television thing had a great cross. When you looked at the screen, the cross, you were looking at it the back, just sideways, but with the back towards you, so you couldn't see who was on it. It was huge. It went way up above the screen. And in the distance, down low, where the ground was, the little boy came, and he was, I'm not sure that he was juggling or that he was dancing, but he was offering something to the figure on the cross. It was very beautiful and imaginative, and I'd like to thank whoever did it. I don't remember. To go back to the tape, to the cartoon that's on television every year, I think I might add that, as I said, I was unhappy about that cartoon because it had so much ugliness in it that had nothing to do with the spirit of what I had done in the song. So finally, I wrote a little play myself for adults and children with both speech and singing, and using the carol at the end. And that made me feel a little better because it kept the spirit of what I had tried to say. And Wood Mills published it, and it's been used quite a lot in schools and churches. I've never seen a performance. I think it may have been done on public TV down in South Carolina, where they go in for public TV.
Is it called The Drum?
It's called The Drum. I think that's all. That's the end of my postscript.
Well, you have certainly written a classic, which has brought a great deal of joy to many people. Thank you.